Hey, what's going on about last night, listeners? Adam Ray here. Quick question for you. You guys like making great money, right? Yeah, of course you do. It'd be weird if you were like, no, man, I hate making great money. I like being poor and eating macaroni and cheese off of the ground. Well, here's a really cool opportunity I just had to share with you. Driving with Uber. Uber, that's right. You ever heard of it? That popular smartphone app that connects riders with drivers? Of course you've heard of it. Everybody fucking uses it. I take Uber all the time when I'm trying to not drink and drive, when I'm trying to get to my shows quickly without waiting for people to move their cars in the packed comedy club parking lots. Also, when you take Uber and you get to chat with different drivers from all over the world, some of the most interesting stories and conversations I've ever had have been with people who drive with Uber. I met a guy a few weeks ago who used to book colleges around the country, and I've now gotten gigs out of it because this dude and I just hit it off about music, comedy. That's why dudes are great. Takes very little information for us to bond. We're like, what's up, man? You like food? Oh, dude, great. You like sports? Dude, what is happening here? We are really developing some camaraderie. People who drive with Uber love it. You know why? Because they love being their own boss. They love making great money, and they love how it's so easy to start. All you need is a car and a license. Driving with Uber is great for anyone who needs flexibility. Parents, if you're trying to drive with Uber, guess what? It's super easy to work around your family's schedule. Students, if you want to drive with Uber, you can do it because you can make great money in between your classes. Now is the prime time to cash in driving with Uber. You'll thank me. I'm telling you, you'll thank me for telling you how to get paid every week, man. I could be getting into your car when you drive with Uber right now and giving you cash. So get on it, get to it, and start making some dope money by driving with Uber. If you've got a car and you've got a license, put them both to work today and start earning serious life-changing money. All you got to do to sign up is visit drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com. Drivewithuber.com. Don't be a goober. Drive with Uber. Drive with Uber. .com. And now enjoy a very special brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the show on iTunes. Continue to give us those 5-star ratings. Comment on the iTunes page helps us climb the charts and continue to do what we love and bringing you great guests like today's show. Our guest is the one and only Ruben Paul. That's right, baby, Ruben Paul. If you don't know this guy, you need to get out to the comedy clubs and see him. He tours all over the country. This episode, some of the craziest stories. Ruben's been in the game 20-plus years, has written for Saturday the Entertainer, Kevin Hart, Chris Rock, countless big-name comics. And his act is unlike anybody you've probably ever seen. His parents are Haitian. He grew up in Carson, just outside of Compton, California. And hearing about that upbringing, it was really eye-opening and incredible because it contributed to the voice he has now on stage the past couple years. You'll hear Ruben talk about his act the last 18 years and how it's really transitioned the last couple into really becoming who he is and talking about the details of his life on stage and how that's really taken his career up a notch. Ruben is one of the best comics in the game. He's a great dude. His stories from growing up into the Straight Outta Compton era, which we get into, obviously, because the movie just came out. His worst ever performing story in South Africa. And growing up with Haitian parents. It's a pretty great episode. His stories are unmatched by anyone we've had on the show. And we were pumped to have him on. I've known Ruben for a while, and we were always on shows at the Laugh Factory together. So I was pumped we could finally get him to sit down and be on the show. He's got great stories. He's a hilarious guy. Quick wit. Always appreciate that when people bring the quickness on the podcast. And Ruben brought it today. So follow him on Twitter, @IamRubenPaul. That's @IamRubenPaul. Follow Brad on Twitter, @FunnyBrad. Follow me on Twitter, @AdamRayComedy. This weekend, Brad Williams will be in Corpus Christi, Texas at Chuckles Comedy Club. Go see Brad, Corpus Christi, Texas, Chuckles Comedy Club, August 20th through the 22nd. And then August 27th through the 30th, Virginia Beach. Brad Williams will be back in Virginia at the Funny Bone in Virginia Beach. Go see Brad, August 28th through the 30th there. I will be in Las Vegas, baby, coming back to the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana, August 31st. Through September 6th, 2 shows a night, 8:30 and 10:30. It's Vegas, baby. It's Labor Day. It's me. It's Brett Riley, Mark Saratella, both former ALN podcast guests. We're going to bring it hard. We're going to bring the heat. Come be a part of it. Labor Day, Las Vegas Laugh Factory, August 31st through September 6th. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com. And of course, while you're on the internet, go to astoymerchandise.com and get all your ALN merch. Roni and the Quave shirts, the Titanic shirts, the straight-up ALN pod shirts, mugs. Got some stickers and hats coming soon. But get those hats and mugs and bring them to shows, and we'll sign them for you. Bring them to all the shows that Brad and I are doing on the road, like the combo show that we're both doing in Tempe, Arizona, October 28th through November 1st. We're doing a live podcast on that Wednesday. Bring all your merch to Tempe on October 28th. We'll sign it for you. We'll talk podcast. You can pick Brad up. Just kidding. Don't do that. You know what'll happen. And of course, go to aboutlastnightpodcast.com to get all past episodes. We've got some amazing shows coming up. Really just can't believe some of the guests that we're getting to come on this show and come to the apartment and talk with us. So subscribe on iTunes. Spread the link to your friends. Keep tweeting at us. Keep emailing us. We're going to do something new starting this episode as well. Brad and I wanted to figure out a way to give some stuff away to you guys, some signed merch, some free stuff. We want to make it fun, though. So every week we're going to have a giveaway where we're going to give some free merch, some free signed merch, whether it's shirts or CDs to you guys. And basically, email me at araysugar@gmail.com. That's araysugar@gmail.com. And this week's giveaway contest, we want to hear your best Clooney Boop, all right? Clooney Boops obviously were originated with five-time record holder guest Brent Morin, who will be returning very shortly, by the way. Him and I were just in New York for his Hour Netflix special, and we'll be recapping that along with other goodies, because Brent's just always the best. But Clooney Boops were originated on his episode, and we want to hear your best Clooney Boop, man. We've seen hashtag Clooney Boop so much over the last several episodes, and what was your Clooney Boop? You know, and you know what a Clooney Boop is. It was a slip-up, all right? A mishap. Something that was embarrassing, something that was crazy, something that was out of the ordinary. That's what a Clooney Boop is, okay? So email me your best Clooney Boop story, and not only will you win free ALN merch, you will have your Clooney Boop read live on the About Last Night podcast. So send your Clooney Boops, please, this week to be read on next week's episode. Send them to araysugar@gmail.com and put title ALN Clooney Boop story in the heading, and maybe you can win some ALN merch, all right? Now that we got all the new contest details out of the way, those are the Twitter handles, that's the merch info, those are the tour dates. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a very special, brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the very funny Ruben Paul.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and a dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Brad, how terrified are you?
I'm very terrified.
Is Brad terrified? Are you scared of dogs?
Well, no, I'm not terrified of... I'm terrified of large dogs.
Okay, this definitely doesn't fit into the category.
Yeah. Pugs. I mean, although I was with Adam one time, and we were walking down Laurel, and
Laurel.
I don't know.
Laurel.
I don't know. It sounds like a French
That's
girl.
That's like Rodeo and Rodeo.
Yeah.
It's like Rodeo in Beverly Hills, and then Rodeo in the hood.
Listen, my mom's from Georgia, my dad's from Texas. We go very little.
Laurel sounds like a friend of hers from Georgia. Like,
I'm going out to play bridge with Laurel. And she's gonna be good.
Oh, she's so good. She always brings the best eggnog and lemonade.
Is that what you think that we drink?
Who drinks eggnog?
Eggnog
if it's not on the during the holidays.
Well, that's a great question.
You want some eggnog on May 1st? What?
You know what though?
Isn't it a holiday beverage?
Yes would always be my answer to that question.
Do you like eggnog?
I guess I only like it during the holidays, and I like it with booze.
Really?
If you if you'd walked in with a jug of eggnog.
Can I make a confession right now?
Yeah, fire away.
Oh, God. Wait, what happened?
I guess you're scared of puns.
Yeah. Oh, man. I was attacked by a dog 6 months ago, and it definitely has created a new amount of fear that I didn't have before.
I've never had eggnog before.
What?
What?
In my whole entire existence.
You own two pugs, but you never had eggnog? I don't know why those things are related, but
I
sure.
Know. Well, you know my opening line is I always say, I have two pugs, but I'm not gay. So,
yeah.
But if you guys can see me right now, I look full on.
I mean, you look like a great owner.
Yeah.
No, I don't. My friends call me and my dog's gay all the time.
Let us set the scene for our listeners right now. Ruben Paul calls us and just says, "Hey guys, do you mind if I have my pug with me?" And at first, Adam and I looked at each other like, "Wait, is pug like a new black code word for girlfriend that we don't know about? Like, is it boo and now it's
or
pug?"
Or
I just
know.
I just say my bitch.
or is pug?
She is a female too. I should have just said I got my bitch with me and brought her. You guys be like, "Oh shit!
Oh shit! Ruben's
you really
got
did
a
bring
bitch? Yeah, bring all your bitches."
Why did that term get slapped on female dogs?
Well, I don't know. It's just
when did it become like a term to use for crazy ex girlfriends?
I think bitch has been around. I'm about to, you know what? I was about to bullshit you and make up some story. I was going to say, I think it's, I was going to go, I think it started like somewhere around 1840 and 1901.
I think it was during
two black guys who also hated eggnog.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of that king's wives, the divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived. Was that King Henry or George or one of
yeah,
them?
Yeah, one of those.
Oh,
yeah.
For real?
I don't know.
Oh.
No. See,
but all you got to do is throw some king in
that's
some
all you
got to
do is be like, yeah, because then the one wife
knows.
Wouldn't give him a son, and he's like, that bitch is crazy.
Yeah, unless you were a history major, you know nothing about kings.
You know, but I know that's the medical term
right.
Yeah.
For a female
yeah.
dog is bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's strange. I went with my
wait, hold on.
What's that?
Then why are you attributing black men as being the originators for calling women bitches? Why?
Well,
why do we get that invention? What the fuck just happened?
I guess I didn't think through my quick joke that I thought would just get us from point A to point B.
I'm usually the racist one. This is new for me. Now I can look at Adam finally and go,
hilarious.
Shame on you, Adam.
What if
Ray?
I did the, yeah,
damn,
of course.
Adam,
yeah.
I look at you totally black. Different now, man. Shit.
Yeah, they were the first ones.
Man, you used to be my nigga, man. Now I can't even trust you.
Oh, God.
No, let's fuck with you. Go ahead.
And so you bring your dog in, and now your pug is running around, and you have a pug, and you're wearing a shirt with a pug on it,
right.
Which you look like the crazy cat lady.
I do
right
look
now.
Like the fuck, but here's I shot a sketch, everybody.
Okay,
with my pug in
awesome.
The sketch,
awesome.
And I had the pug shirt on,
yeah.
Because this is something normally you wouldn't see a black man doing is walking around with the pug and having a pug shirt on.
Well, but
so then there ensues the hilarity.
Well, not true, because back in the day, the two black dudes who first drank eggnog and called women bitches wore pug shirts. So
see. And also, you say that, but I feel like if I saw a black dude wearing a pug shirt walking a pug, I'd be like, oh, so we're supposed to do that now?
Well, I don't know if you could totally see it, but on the pug shirt,
yeah.
The pug has a gold tooth, which
nice.
Is racist in itself. Why does the pug have to have a gold tooth?
I mean.
And it says, well,
nothing but a pug thing.
Oh my
that.
God. I feel like you're going to bust out your phone and be like, and this is me and my pugs on vacation.
You know what? It's timely, though, because, you know, the same way Straight Outta Compton, they can make an all-dog version, like Homeward Bound meets Straight Outta Compton with dogs as the rappers.
I
and just dub over the voices
shit.
The way they did Homeward Bound.
Yeah.
How brilliantly funny. Would
yeah.
that fucking be?
I mean, I said it in jest, but now I'm 1,000% wanting to fund
this. I'm on board, dude.
And I'm looking at your pug's face right now. That pug is a young cube. Absolutely. Hey, pug.
Yay,
pug.
Yay.
Yeah, yeah, pug again. Yay, yay. I'm in here. There
we be
is.
Pugging.
Till the day we die, son.
You grew up in Carson.
Yes, that's where I'm from, born and raised.
Yeah.
I grew up on 190th in Wilmington, which is on the border of Carson and Compton. And ironically enough, during all that Straight Outta Compton stuff,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Carson, who had rappers like Rask, I mean, Carson is, I mean,
was DOC from Carson?
I think he lived in Carson for a minute. But Raz Castle was from Carson. So Carson and Compton, people don't realize this. Carson used to be Compton at one point.
Yeah.
Like in the 60s or some shit like that before I was born.
Right. And well, because now you guys got the Home Depot Center. It's like, oh, Carson's lovely.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. they built the college and then that came.
Yeah.
Then Carson took on a different meaning. But some people know Carson as hell. But Carson is never really considered like the hood.
Yeah,
hood,
it doesn't have that same reputation. But
exactly.
But someone who just grew up there, was it that kind of thing?
Well, put it this way. People are always shocked. When I was, I guess, 11 years old, I saw a white girl get shot in her stomach outside my window.
Oh, what?
But here's the thing. First of all, she was like the only white person I had ever seen in my neighborhood, ever.
So she deserved it, is what you're trying to say.
I don't know, but is this so ironic that one time
she got shot?
She got shot in the stomach. And I don't know, maybe she was trying to get drugs or some shit.
Who knows?
And I just remember looking at it, being a kid, and then my sister was like, get your ass out the window. And, you know.
How many people lived in your home growing up?
Just me, my mom, dad, brother, and sister.
Yeah.
And there then we would always have, like, immigrants or different people staying at our house.
No shit?
Yeah, because my parents are missionaries, so they used to always bring in people. Like, one of the funniest things, I remember my dad brought home this Mexican family. So I come home from school, and my friend's like, yo, what all them Mexicans doing in your house? And I was like, what are you talking about? So I go in, and I just, like, a kid is in my room, sleeping in my bed. Like,
what
they the totally,
fuck?
Like, were
just taken over.
Just took over. And I go to my mom and go, Mom, who's that in my bed? And she goes, oh, that's your brother. I'm like, my brother?
Wait, what?
She's like, yeah, they're all your brothers. Everybody who we bring in here is your brothers and your sister.
Now,
that was just their mentality.
But
in my mind, I was like, damn, is my mom a hoe?
Well, yeah, did she have a secret family?
Exactly. No, but that's just how they were. They would always, like...
And would you just immediately adapt and go, okay, cool, I don't know his favorite color or favorite sexual position, but,
I'm on the board. But that's what they did. And then after a while, it got to be so much where, you know, when you give out free stuff, people take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So people start stealing and doing all kind of things. So my mom, ironically, or not ironically, I guess she had to for her kids, she would, anything that didn't have to be refrigerated, she would keep it in a closet and she had the only key.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, for a while, because you'd come home and then everything would be eaten and gone.
She was like me when I was in my fraternity. I was the kitchen steward, and all the potheads would smoke me out so they could get into the kitchen. But I was like, no, I have the key. You can't get in unless I get down there. But they would steal it from me.
Wow.
Anyway, that was a long stretch, but it felt like we were living in the same world.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay, so
but
how
I'm
many...
I'm from Carson. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so you grew up to kind of... you were... how old when all the Straight Outta Compton stuff was going on?
I was in junior high.
Yeah.
Junior high and high school, and I used to rap because hip hop, when that hip hop really took off on the West Coast, you had a lot of rappers and a lot of anybody who wanted to be involved in the hip hop culture. We were mimicking the East Coast because that's where it started.
Yep.
So, like, for me, LL Cool J used to have his first song that a lot of people don't know used to be a song called "I Need a Beat," and he used all these big fucking words, and I was always into, like, you know, vocabulary and different stuff. And I remember buying a thesaurus because I wanted to sound like LL. So I used to rap, and everybody else was doing, like, a hip hop, a hibbit, and I was fucking coming with all these big ass words and shit because I'd heard LL.
It's so, like, Ruben Paul straight rhymed the word defenestrate.
I got a conundrum.
No, I'm not bullshitting you.
Wow.
Like, LL, well, one of the lines that LL was like, I need a beat. Yeah, I made it. Don't look astonished. I had to remind you of what I accomplished. My scenario for your stereo. Up, King D. Zero is the ratio. So you're in junior high school. You're like, what? Wait, what?
Yeah.
You rewinding that shit? Like,
where's
what?
The hip and the hops?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, where's the, have you ever went over a friend's, like, where's that shit? Where's the Dr. Seuss type rap?
Yeah.
You know, and then, so I started doing that, and I'm not ashamed to say it because I've been outed already. I used to go by the name of MC Bandit. So
Wow. I was wondering when we were going to get to meet him.
Yeah.
I said that publicly.
Hey, you know what? When I would DJ junior high dances, that's how I made my money in high school.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. And my name was DJ Fourfoot. So don't even fret, man. Don't even trip.
I got love for Brad now. Used to DJ.
Well, I mean, okay. When I say DJ, I don't mean on the ones and the twos.
Okay.
And I mean like, like that. None of that was happening. I mean, I put the 50 Cent Into Club single on the CD track, hit close, and then hit play.
Okay.
And there was two CD tracks.
Well,
so.
How did you get chosen to do that? You're like, I had all the music? Like, you had all the music?
I had a ton of music, and I was always the outspoken, like, guy in when I went to that junior high.
Uh-huh.
So they just wanted, rather than hire a professional DJ for every dance, they wanted to get an old kid that would do it for nothing. So they bought all the equipment, and then I just came in with the CDs and tried to make sure that the junior high kids didn't grind on each other too much.
Yeah, well, there's no stopping that.
No. There was no stopping
that.
Yeah,
don't try to stop any junior high kid from dry humping.
No, yeah, so don't worry about your...
DJ Fourfoot.
Yeah, DJ Fourfoot in the Heezy for Sheezy.
Oh, my God.
Holy
Remember
shit.
When that was, like, actually a cool thing to say?
Oh, yeah.
Never for white people, but yes.
But here's the thing. You know, in the black community, I'm going to let you guys in on the secret.
Please.
All right.
Once you guys...
Tell us about the secrets of the blacks.
I will tell you the secrets of the black community.
By the way, those headphones, I think you can swap. Can you hear okay?
Yeah.
I think this is supposed to be the other side around, yeah. Oh. If you want to flip it, you might get better. Let me know. Is that...
Yeah,
it was the exact same thing.
Yeah.
They're fucking headphones. I mean, there's not one that only
we've had issues
morphs
sometimes.
With your right ear. If the R has to be on the right ear and the L has
you're
to
right,
be on the
don't
left
interrupt
ear.
Him when he's giving us the secrets of the blacks.
Yeah, you're right.
See how he said the blacks? Wow.
Wow. Mom man. From Georgia, okay. Dad from Texas. Gonna just reiterate that one all more right. time.
All right, tell us a secret.
And once you guys catch on to a slang word,
mm-hmm.
we bury it. We stop using it immediately.
I get that.
So as soon as you
that
guys
makes
say
total sense.
Off the sheezy for sheezy,
done.
A mass email goes out and goes, this word, if you have melanin in your skin, you must stop using
wow.
this word
how
immediately.
How many of those were used and then not used in the 90s?
Shizzle, skeet, skeet. I'm just
skeet, skeet, skeet.
Yeah. Once a white guy named Trent starts saying skeet, skeet, all the black guys are like, yo, it's gone.
Hear ye, hear ye. Skeet will no longer be used in the black community.
When you have commentators on Fox News going, yo, George Bush said it for real. All the black guys are like, okay, no more for reals. Done.
And you know what's interesting is I know we're jumping all over the place. You take somebody
how we do it.
Like Stuart Scott, rest in peace.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
You know, to get so popular by just using language that mm-hmm. we use in our community, and it kind of took off and kind of became his thing. But now when you listen to ESPN, I mean, some of these announcers are dope. Like, they'll quote lyrics to a song that only real hip-hop heads would know the lyrics.
Yeah.
And they do it in a way where... Maybe if you didn't know the lyrics, you just go, "Oh, that was
kind of clever."
Yeah, that was a clever thing that he said. But you know, it's interesting how hip hop, the culture, has gone mainstream.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because when Stuart Scott said "Booyah," everyone was like looking around, like, "Wait, what is this? What is this booyah that he's talking about?"
Yeah.
What? Like, and now it just seems like commonplace.
Yeah.
Listen, how we can tie this together. This is going to be great.
Okay.
There was a Samoan group called the Booyah Tribe.
Okay.
You guys never heard of the Booyah Tribe?
No.
Google that shit.
No.
All right. Carson is so big. Like, Carson is very segregated. Like, literally, there's the black part of Carson, there's a Mexican part of Carson,
really?
And there's a Filipino Samoan part of Carson.
And Carson's not even that big of a city, so the fact that
it's interesting how it's segregated like that.
Yeah.
So when a lot of people find out I'm from Carson and go, oh, did you grow up around a lot of Filipinos? I go, yeah and no. They were in the city, but most of the black people live in, like, Del Amo.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, like, Centerview, and then there's, like, what we call the patch, and there's different areas. But the Filipinos and Samoans live by Carson High School, and there was a popular rap group during the Straight Outta Compton time called the Booyah Tribe. And there were these big-ass gangster Samoans that you did not want to fuck with.
That,
if you Google it, like, they were huge.
That scares me, that, like, Samoan gangsters, because Samoans are just...
You don't even know.
They're massive.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a cheesy joke in my act sometimes that I rarely use, but I say, oh, I once went on a blind date with a Samoan midget. She was 5'8". And that's just kind of...
Yeah.
Holy shit. These guys are huge.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're huge.
They were popping. Like, they released like, you know, hood
covered
singles.
Covered in tats.
Yeah.
Long hair.
Yeah, they were... And cool dudes. I remember...
Did they do a haka? Because that would have been terrifying.
I don't know. I don't know. I just remember them, like, growing up, like, the Booyah tribe. And they were, like, the only ones that would come to where, to all like the black hip hop functions, like, oh shit, the Booyah tribe is here.
Well, sure, because who's going to tell them get out?
Exactly.
Now, when you say the white girl got shot there, was it that?
It was a drug deal. It was just some random thing.
But was
thing.
It that dangerous for white people to even be?
No. That's all. Like, I always say this, like, people always have this, like, white people go, oh, I have a friend that lives over, is it safe for me to go there? And most black people would tell you this, if they're being honest. I think white people are safer in the hood than black people. Why? Because you'd be so out of place,
right,
that people would think you're either a cop or they wouldn't want to have anything to do with you just because it might bring down so much heat.
Right. Yeah, they know that if
shit goes down,
white guy gets shot in the hood, now all the news is like, Now the cops are going to come in. Now the news copter is going
to
come in.
It's like that bit Chappelle used to have, too, where he goes, when you see one white guy hanging out with a group of black dudes, what did he say? He was like, he's like, what did that white guy do to get the respect of all those black guys? Like, you fear that guy the most.
Well, yeah. And you know what's interesting is, you're talking about shutting down a whole neighborhood. I never thought it could happen, but one of my close friends used to live off of 53rd and Hoover. Now, that's... like Hoover Crips, Rolling 60s, that whole area. Mm-hmm. And I guess, the police were going down the street and some kid ran out into the middle of the street with an AK and fucking shot at the police car. So
it's like some Grand Theft Auto stuff.
What I'm about to tell you is the craziest shit in the world. Within 15 minutes, that whole area was locked the fuck down.
Yeah.
Like, no one could come in, no one can go out, and the cops went door to door until they caught the dude. And they caught the dude underneath the steps of a house.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the front porch, he was under the porch. They sent in a police dog to get this guy. Mm-hmm. He killed the police dog.
What?
So ended up getting charged for murder for the police dog.
Yeah, because that's killing a cop.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Yeah, crazy. One of the craziest stories I'd ever heard. And because I remember calling him, I was like, "Yo, I tried to come through." He's like, "Dude, we wasn't going anywhere for hours. They shut the whole neighborhood down."
Wow.
Now, does that make you? I mean, how old are you at this point?
At that point,
yeah,
probably 24.
Okay.
And
you're still living there?
No. I was my boy was living there.
Okay, cool.
I was going to pick him up, and I went over there. Everything was shut down. I'm like, dude, helicopters everywhere. I'm like, dude, I can't even get close. And then he told me, he's like, yo, man, such and such, somebody shot at a police, and they shut the whole area down.
So now when you hear stories like that, are you just like, man, thank God I don't live there anymore, or...
Well, I never lived there, but even in Carson, here's the thing. There's great people that live in these neighborhoods.
Sure.
And I think the stigma is when people bring up the hood that it's like, and when I started talking about this in my stamp, it's like they think it's blocks and blocks of all people wearing red and blue.
Right.
Like, literally, it's probably 100 guys that give the whole entire...
Right. Yeah.
Neighborhood that reputation.
People just need to generalize.
That's how
they feel
exactly.
Like they're safe, because they feel that gives them some sort of knowledge of, like, I know what to expect and what to fear and look out for.
And by on any level, I'm not trying to compare Carson to a lot of the violence that happens in more violent areas, like some parts of South Central and Watts and different places like that. But we had unnecessary violence in our neighborhood, which is even worse. Like, there's nothing worse than a gangbanger with a swimming pool in his backyard.
What?
Why's that?
Is this some...
Like, why? Like, the
is
neighborhood...
Is this a riddle?
No. This is absolutely real life.
Why is that?
If I took you to Del Amo, where I lived, like, you'd go, no way you guys had gangbangers. Because it's two-story houses, you know.
Oh, it's like it looks like a nice suburb. Affluent area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Swimming pools, you know. I had three swimming pools on my block, you know, friends who had swimming pools. Yeah. And, you know, all black neighborhood looked really nice. But when that sun goes down, and I don't know, it's because we got a lot of flack. Like, if some people go, where are you from? Oh, he from Carson. He ain't from the hood. And I think that mentality somehow got into the minds of some of these people, so they felt like we have to be extra violent to show we're not punks over here. So wow, you just have unnecessary murders.
That's yeah, and
in,
that's
a, in the, a neighborhood and, that shouldn't have it.
Sure, and that's the and that's probably the most frightening thing, because
yes,
because if it's like gang on gang, you just go, okay, don't hang out with the gangs, don't go where they are when you see them. Like yeah, but if it's just random acts, it's like how do we know what to avoid? How do we know what to be around?
And just to describe to you what kind of neighborhood Carson is. Carson would be like if your parents in the 60s, if your parents had a good job and they wanted to get out the hood, they would move to Carson.
Okay, so it's like the next step.
It was the next step right above Compton or South Central and all that. So
And then in 3 years, we'll be in Long Beach.
Yeah. Exactly. And then Long Beach got wild.
Yeah.
You know? But it was that. He like kind of like that was it. It was like the step up.
Gotcha.
But again, but you didn't leave that mentality back there. So now if you're talking to your old friends or different people like, oh, you live in Carson, like you soft. So that's why people in my neighborhood had to act extra hard and do extra vicious things. Like, dude. You have a swimming pool.
Yeah. Life is good.
Life is good.
You're all right.
But you have both your parents.
Like, that's good.
Fuck. Yeah,
Tony Rock, shout out to Tony. Mm-hmm. Tony was the first, when I brought him to my neighborhood, he was like, yo, this is the hood? So when I talk about it on my stage, that's what, you know, it all comes from this conversation. Then he told me, he's like, you know what? This neighborhood reminds me of Queens in New York.
Where he grew up, right?
Yeah. No, he grew up in Brooklyn.
Okay.
But the Brooklyn people always felt like when you went to Queens, Queens was kind of nice. Like they had lawns and different things.
Yeah, right.
But it was still a lot of murders and still a lot of crazy things going on in some parts of Queens. Mm-hmm. So it's just a mentality, a sick mentality that's passed down from just not really, but caring about the wrong things. Right.
Yeah. Right.
You know, wanting to be tough, wanting to be hard for no
reason. Yeah, instead of having an emphasis of just like getting in. Job and providing for family.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Oh, now all of a sudden you white, you're trying to be white, or you soft, or this, that, and your heart. And it's like, I mean, some of the stuff that I went through and saw as a kid, I shouldn't have.
Well,
it
shouldn't have happened. You saw a girl get shot.
Seen a girl get shot. Now, then I went to Banning High School in Wilmington, which is like in the middle of, you know, the Mexican gang territory, Wimas, you know. And then we were bussed in. So you got blacks being bussed into an all-Mexican school.
Holy shit.
So that was a whole nother set of issues.
Yeah.
Like, dude, my life is, like,
now does that,
crazy on so many levels.
Now, does that sort of prepare you for stand-up in that you kind of, like, would you use humor to get along with the kids that were like, hey,
or just to deal with all this shit? Like you just said, like your life is crazy in so many ways. So, I want to touch on this as much as we can. But, like, how much of all that creates the the comedy, like do you start, you know, using that as a way to deal with the craziness, or is it
I think, you know, there's only two ways to deal with things. How I grew up is either violence or humor. You know, and then when you're thrusted into an environment, I know it was a time, and it's changed a lot, I hope. Well, they stopped busing in, but there used to be a time where our school was three stories high, and like the third floor was where all the gangbangers used to, you know, hang out. So there was a time when it was like the blacks and the Mexican riots that used to go on, that if you're going to the class, you'd have to go, like, we'd walk each other to class.
Fuck.
It's like, who got a class on the third floor? I'm like, yo, all right, let's roll. Like, you wouldn't go by yourself, so you wouldn't get jumped by a Mexican. You know what I mean? It was that type of environment, you know?
Never.
And that wasn't like a year-round thing, but it's just like, I don't know if it was like do the right thing when it was extra hot or something, then there was some beef. But, you know, maybe once or twice a year, a black guy would get into a fight with a Mexican guy, yeah. and somebody would get jumped, and then
yeah.
it just escalated where everybody kind of circled the wagons. But I always find it ironic because we were so outnumbered, but we still held our own during that time.
Wow.
Did you get in fights ever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's high school.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
Man, see, I get jealous of that because, like, You guys had your groups. I had three dwarves in my high school. We weren't exactly a gang.
Wait.
Yes, you were. You just didn't name yourself.
But I find that fascinating.
Ankle biters.
To have
ankle biters unite.
And you all have pugs.
Yeah, we all just walk around with pugs like we hot. Yeah, you got your pit bull. I got my pugs. Pug life. My pug will mess you up.
Now, I didn't even know that there was more than one. That is surprising.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. We had three dwarves in my high school, and then
so that must have made you feel better.
Well, yeah, because
did they bust in the other two after they found out you were there, and they were like, "He needs friends."
Not exactly a bus. It was just more like an underground tunnel system, kind of like Fraggle Rock.
I used to love Fraggle Rock.
Exactly. Who doesn't? Now you're speaking our language. Yeah.
Doozers were the original dwarves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was me, and then it was Sandy and James, and Sandy and James were brother and sister, and
so they had a built-in
but the weird part is that Sandy was younger, so when she got into the school, all these guys were like coming up to James going, "Dude, there is a dwarf chick, you have got to go date her." And he's like, "Yeah, that's my sister, idiot." Like, I can't. Because like, they just want to see a dwarf couple so bad. They're like, "Dude, you got to go." And then
isn't that funny when you're like and obviously, Brad can relate to this. When you stick out in an environment,
right?
Like one of my first jokes ever, and before I really dug down into my personal life, when I was a younger comic and I used to try to be a little bit more personal back then, one of my first jokes was, I grew up in an all black neighborhood, went to an all Mexican high school, went to an all white church, and shopped at a lot of Asian stores. That used to be like, because that was kind of my life.
Yeah,
but I remember going to this church because my parents are missionaries, it was all white church. Mm-hmm. And whenever a black visitor came, they would, if it was a girl, they'd go, "Hey, Keisha's nice, isn't she, Reuben? What do you think of Keisha?"
So funny.
You know, so I could totally relate.
Like, they try to hook you up.
Want to stay with your kind.
My mom does the same thing with Jewish girls.
Really?
All the time. And my rabbis that I've I taught their kids growing up, so, and they're real cool people. I say, like, it sounds like a bigger deal when I say my rabbis, as if like that's such a Jewish thing to have.
That
like,
is your rap
I've
group.
Got
Yo, man, hanging with my rabbis.
What up, Mazel Tov?
Shabbat Shalom, motherfucker.
Yo, Adam, why you be hanging out with them ankle biters? Yo, stick with your rabbis. Shalom.
But they're always trying to hook me up with like they'll be, you know, my mom will, you know, I met up, so I was out with Pam, and you know, her daughter, you know, Christine is back on the market. I'm like, "Oh, Christine, the Jew, right?" "Well, it's just one thing about her, but I think it would be great."
Is this the main thing about her? But
dude, a girl could fucking. It's such a important thing. Like,
well, here's the thing. I think naturally, people instinctually feel like be with your own kind.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it got to be a problem because my brother had a crush on this white girl.
Oh shit!
And she had a crush on him. And
this is in what era?
This was in 80s? In the 80s?
Yeah, okay.
And I just remember him, you know, I was a kid. I just remember him being disappointed because they wouldn't let them go to the church function together.
Yikes.
Now, that's when it's wrong. Like, I could see...
The parents or the...
Oh, the parents.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, are the people at the church kind of said something to my parents like, "I don't think it's a good idea if... you know, my brother David goes out with this particular..."
I hate that phrasing too, because that's such a controlling, passive. Like, it would be in his best interest.
Best interest,
to not
say,
But at a church, like now that I'm older, like that's gross. You know what I mean? Like, you would think, really, you're gonna tell two kids that?
Yeah,
at a church function.
And and it's just that thing that also makes you realize that racism, you're not born with that. Like, it's literally comes from the outside. Because there's like, yeah, hey, I like you, you like me, let's hang out. And then it's the outside forces that come and go, whoa.
Yeah.
What are you doing
here? Wait, whoa, it's not supposed to be like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome. So at what point does comedy start to become a part of your, like, did you make your brother and sister laugh? Like, growing up in Carson, having the missionary parents, like, this does not scream sitcom to me.
No, but you know what's...
actually, it does, but...
Now it does, which is interesting. Because when I first started doing stand-up, my parents are originally from Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
When I started doing stand-up, all the comedians that Richard Pryor, a lot of the comedians that I like talked about their personal lives, so yeah. I was like, oh, you know, I'll start talking about my family, and it used to bomb, especially because when I started off, I used to do all black rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So and what's funny is no one even remembers this time, but people didn't know what Haitians were.
Right.
So because my lifestyle wasn't really Haitian, because I grew up in the hood, in an African American neighborhood, I just basically did African American comedy. And it wasn't until later on when people started finding out, like Johnny Sanchez or George Lopez or different people, and when I started working with Russell, I'm not trying to name drop. I'm just saying I'm just saying people who would be like, dude, why don't you talk about being Haitian in your family? Like, I would tell them stories about my father, and they'd literally be dying, like, dude, you got to do that on stage. And I go, yeah, I used to try to do it. And two things happened. One, back then, I wasn't a good enough comic to really pull it off back then. But the most important thing, not making excuses, after the earthquake, that really gave people a reference point for Haiti. Because you say African, everybody has a stereotype.
Yep. Sure.
You say Jamaican, everybody has a stereotype.
Yeah, you say
Haitian. What the fuck? What is
Google? Google. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what I was dealing with. Now that people know what Haiti is, and now that I'm a better comic, where now I do it all over the world, because whether you know about Haiti or not, I'm good enough to paint the picture where it's like, okay, whether you know what a Haitian is or not, this is my family.
Sure.
These are the situations I ran into.
I can imagine if you're going up at, let's say, the Comedy Union and... and
tell people what the Comedy Union
which is.
Is
a notorious, pretty much an all black club. An all-black comedy club. And you go up there and you're coming up looking like you look. They're like, all right, so we're going to get black comic. They're like, oh, yo, my mom's from Haiti. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
They must have been confused by that.
Yeah, and then now it's funny because it was in the last 5 years, especially when I started working with Russell, because he does all the international stuff.
Right.
Then he's like, yo, dude, you need to talk about that stuff.
Now, again, not to name drop, this is Kurt Russell, the actor. The big global comedian. Russell Peters.
Yes.
It would be great, though.
Wouldn't it be awesome if it was Kurt Russell? Get out there. No, I don't even know.
I love, that's the best, by the way, when you've clearly never tried to do a Kurt Russell impression.
I know.
Because you just tried and stopped yourself 4 seconds in.
That's not going well.
It's probably dead on.
Yeah. When did you meet Russell Peters?
I met Russell in 2006.
Okay.
And
now was he Russell Peters?
Here's the funny thing. He was Russell Peters, but I had no idea who he was.
Right.
I was at the Laugh Factory, and I got off stage. He's like, "Yo, you're a funny dude. Where are you from?" We just started talking, and then somehow we started talking about boxing. Mm-hmm. And
you're a big fan.
I'm a big boxing fan. I go to fights the whole nine. And he's a big boxing fan, and then he invited me to his house,
mm-hmm.
and I go to his house, and he lives in this big ass house.
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Yo, dude, what do you do?" And he goes, "I'm a comedian." I go, "Yeah, I know you're a comedian." I go, "But what else do you do?"
Yeah.
And he goes, "That's all I do." I go, "Seriously, dude, like, what's your, like, I wanted to know what his
day job
was. Do you
have, like, an internet startup? Are you a day trader?"
Yeah, like what do you do?
How
like,
are you his paying house for was this
that,
mansion?
Yeah, his house was that big. And he goes, and he was embarrassed. He was like, "Dude, I'm kind of, like, famous in Canada."
Yeah.
And I go, "Yeah, right." He goes, "No,
like,
dude." He's like,
so good.
He's like, I'm kind of a big deal in Canada.
And like Alanis Morissette is famous in Canada.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way you can have
I'm
all
laughing like, my ass off.
Canada, Alanis Morissette, Wayne Gretzky, that's it.
That's it.
Maybe Rick Moranis.
And maybe Alan Thicke, you know?
Wow, maybe Alan Thicke should be the name of some book or documentary somewhere.
Maybe Alan Thicke.
Yeah. Maybe Alan Thicke.
So he kind of convinced me.
Yeah.
And then...
well, sure, he kind of convinced you by opening up his garage and see, all right, that's
but still,
a
when somebody tells you that they just do comedy at
no
that
way.
Point and they're not famous, you're still not believing it. But this is when I believed it, Brad. He goes... to show you how much I didn't believe him. So about a week later, I come over to his house to watch a fight, and then he goes, "Hey man, I got some dates in Canada next week. Do you want to come?" And I go, "Dude, I need more notice than that, man. To get a ticket at this late of a notice,
mm-hmm.
like that would be like I can't afford that.
Yeah, it's gonna be like $700 flight."
Yeah, and he's like, "Nah, I got your ticket." I go, "You got my ticket?" "Oh yeah, I'll get you a ticket and I'll pay you and it's a gig." And I go, "Are you sure?" He goes, "Yeah, dude. Like, yeah,
it's
I'll take
okay.
care of her. I'll
yeah.
take care of everything."
Yeah.
So he picks me up at the airport when I land in Toronto. He picks me up at the airport. I get into his car, and he goes, "You hungry?" I go, "Yeah." So we go to the mall, and he goes, "Before we get out the car," he goes, "Dude, I'm going to get mobbed in this mall." I'm like, "Get the fuck out of here."
You still don't believe him.
I still don't believe him.
It's like the most elaborate prank ever.
But here's the thing.
You're like, "Is Alan Thicke going to pop out and join us? Because then I'll believe this story."
So we go to the mall. I kind of started believing him a little bit, but I didn't know to what level. Because in my mind, when I think of famous, I think of
Eddie Murphy
yeah. and, yeah. you know, Jamie Foxx.
People you know.
People I know.
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold, what he said was true. And then, you know, he was performing in front of, I think at that time, we did a theater and it was like 5,000 people or three.
Holy
you know,
shit.
It was like crazy. And I go, yeah. "Oh, shit.
Oh, wow.
So,
you do comedy."
And then after that, I didn't work with him for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, just as comics, we'd see each other around.
Sure, sure, did he get mobbed at that mall?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like
Beatles style.
Like crazy. But it was all Indians.
Right.
You know? But in Canada, it was, you know, this particular mall was like, and, you know, but then we went to other places where it was just all white people. He was getting mobbed there, too. And that's how our friendship kind of started. Then I was kind of doing my own thing. He was doing his whole thing. And then randomly he heard that I helped people put stuff together comedy wise. And then he asked me to help him do something. He was taping a show. And then our friendship kind of took off from there. And
shit.
So I work on and off with him. But it did, the best advice that I did get from all of them was tell your story. And
yeah.
I kind of just started telling my story. And that's one thing that's great about Brad or anybody who has a built-in story. It's like you cannot not be who you are
yeah.
and go on stage and not talk about that.
Yeah.
And I have a philosophy, and this is a gift to anybody listening. Any comic that's famous, I'll say 90% of them,
mm-hmm.
you can describe what they do in a sentence or less on
sure.
why they're famous. And they might not want to be labeled as that, but for some reason in our business, if you can be easily defined and easily labeled, you're easier to package and sell.
Yeah.
Right.
And that makes more sense.
Yeah, yep. like Louis started blowing up when he became the guy that's like, he's going to tell dirty jokes about his kids.
Yeah.
Like he's going to go on stage and say, "I fucking hate my daughter."
Yeah.
And like stuff like that. And then that's when Louis kind of.
Boom. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
That's that. And it is something that now that I'm doing it in my head, like I'm going through that Rolodex of comics, like, okay, he does this, she does this. And
they like
yeah,
to label you. George Lopez, he's the Mexican comic.
Right. They
blah, blah, blah. He's that comic.
Kevin
Hart,
they
he's
just
the short,
wanna,
you know?
Yeah. They just want to be able to go into a meeting and be like, "We have this project for Ruben Paul. He's the Haitian guy that grew up in the hood."
And you know what's crazy,
California.
Man? I've been doing comedy almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And these last, and part of it is obviously growth and development, but people have come up to me when I was in Montreal last year. They go, like, industry is like, "You know what? I've always thought you were funny, but this stuff that you're doing now is just great." And to be honest with you, I don't think it's as strong, you know, because when you're new, you're just trying to get standing ovations
right.
every night
yep.
and absolutely
build a
destroy.
Name for yourself.
Yeah. But it's people latch on to it.
Yeah.
And even if you watch Kevin Hart, like a lot of people try to criticize Kevin. I think Kevin is hilarious. I think he's a funny guy. But more importantly, the audience feels like they know him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's telling his story.
Yeah.
And that's more valuable than somebody going up on stage and just destroying just to be destroying.
Because you'll get a different experience out of the show.
Yes.
Yes, you can tell extremely funny jokes that have, like, you could be an
observational.
Yeah, you have great social commentary, but it's like, what are you? Who are you? Yeah,
yeah.
You don't get to know somebody through commentary.
Yeah. And then when people see that, when you come back to that area, they don't feel like they're going back to see the comedian Ruben Paul. They're like, oh no, I'm seeing my friend Ruben Paul.
Absolutely.
Because they've gotten to know you now on stage. You're like, oh yeah, I know that guy.
Yeah.
And it's always weird when you start doing material like that, because then when you're off stage, you'll have random strangers come up to you and be like, yo dude, and then they just start talking to you about your life, and you're like, wait, did I know you? Did I go to high school with you? Like, you're a fan. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
And it's almost like instinctually as comics, we're almost taught to hate that. Mm-hmm. Man, Brad is only getting that because he's, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or if, man, George only do that because he's Mexican. And then,
right.
Yeah. That's who they are. Yeah. Well, Cat Williams, only reason why, because he do, like, it's.
Well, what do you expect Cat Williams to do? Was he going to talk about being a Midwestern white guy? Like, no, he's not.
Yeah.
You know, and
he's going to talk about his life.
And I think, like, for me, I never wanted to be put in a box, so I fought against that for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then now I've found out that I have more value to whatever show that I'm on because I am doing something that's honestly who I am. That's
sure.
Gonna
and
be.
You're offering that different perspective, whereas maybe when you're first coming up, and absolutely correct me if I'm wrong, maybe to get booked initially, you maybe had to do like the sort of typical maybe
absolutely.
Def Jam stuff just to get booked. But now once you're got booked, now it's like, okay, now I've got the credibility. Now I can really be me.
Exactly.
And not just do the stuff that everyone expects.
And you know, it's interesting writing-wise, mm-hmm. when I go back and look at the old material, I understand why I wrote those jokes.
Like
and
what?
And now they make more sense now.
Yeah.
Because I think some of my friends, they go, oh, now I get it. Like, I always thought the other stuff was funny, but now it's really funny because we know that you're Haitian. Now we have a clearer picture. Mm-hmm. Like, the picture was a little hazy before. It was still funny, but now I think it's crystal clear with some of the bits. Like, now you know why I think the way that I think, why my perspective is the way that it is.
And you're saying it really, you're almost 20 years in?
Yeah.
And you're saying just in the last couple of years, you feel like you had this
breakthrough.
Wow.
Major breakthrough. And I could tell because I'm...
So just 18 years in, you were still doing your thing,
still doing
my really
thing,
well,
still working, still writing for people, like supplement my income anywhere that I could. But now people are seeing TV. Like when I talk about my sister that went to prison, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now the fact that I had Haitian parents and had a sister who was hood and went to, now it's funnier automatically.
What do you think really contributed to that breakthrough other than just...
Just people going, just tell your story. Because, well, honestly, part of me goes like, I'm a funny guy, but there's a lot of funny black guys. Mm-hmm. So what's going to make me different than them? Like, no one is going to outdo DL in black people do this, white people do that.
Yeah.
Like, he's fantastic at that.
He's got it.
That's what he does. He has that. So I never really did that type of comedy anyway, but I used to write really good, great observational jokes that I thought were original and from my perspective. But a lot of times, those are jokes other people can come up with.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, even if they steal them, you can be like, well, I had that same thought. But nobody has two parents that are from Haiti that got killed in a car accident, that I have two pugs, or, you know what I mean? Like, those things, that's Ruben Paul.
Yeah.
Like, you can't
hack that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That grew up in Carson.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm this is just an observation from me, Ruben. I think whenever you're giving advice to people, you should absolutely have one of your dogs in your lap.
Yeah.
Because
I'm
just
taking everything you say.
It just has
more
weight. Yeah, I feel like I'm being talked to by a Bond villain right now.
Yeah.
And fantastic. Like, what you need to do in stand up comedy as I stroke my pug. which sounds like a euphemism for masturbation, stroking the pug, but whatever.
Yeah, so I think that is that's been the biggest breakthrough of just, you know, one thing I say before I go on stage is like, just tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever comes out. But I'm.
Do you riff a lot on stage? Or you write a lot?
I riff a lot on stage.
Now, do you think writing for
especially
the...
internationally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because?
Just because you absorb so much.
Yeah.
Because being a troop, like, I've done a lot of stuff for the troops over the years. But that's just like performing in the U.S. because once you're on the base,
sure.
I don't know if
that's
you guys
America.
Are, you're
I've
in America.
Done, yeah, yeah, I've done the USO things in Iraq, Kuwait, yeah. Oman, all that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's you're in obviously different surroundings.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still the American experience. When you reference an American TV show or an American ism,
yes,
they'll get that.
Yeah.
But you've done Shanghai, Hong Kong,
and you're performing for the people that
right.
live in those places,
right?
So you're doing all. I mean, you have bits about.
So what I'll do is a lot of times I'll get to a place and I'm blessed enough to have the ability where I'm very observant.
Okay.
So what I'll do, I mean, I was just telling a comic this the other day. The only thing that I do is I'll come up with whatever observations I have, whatever thing I notice on the street.
Yeah.
Like as mm-hmm. comics, we all do that. Even if we go to Utah or
sure.
yeah.
Indiana or whatever,
yeah.
we kind of see what's different from where we come from
yeah.
and talk about that. But the thing I think I do is I try to think of every joke that every comic will think of and do something different
yeah.
or mm-hmm. make it more personal to myself.
Yeah.
Because I know if a black guy goes to Hong Kong, if a black guy goes to Shanghai,
sure.
most of the jokes are going to be like, hey, I'm the only black guy in this
yep.
area.
Yeah, you can find me. I'm tall. Yeah, yeah.
See, that's my problem.
Exactly.
I would
yeah.
say that anyway, even if it was me going out there.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I'm the only black guy here. It's just like, why isn't this going well? Ruben, you said it would work.
Yeah. But those are the things that I try to avoid. But I honestly try to write like a fresh 10 minutes
that's
that
awesome.
I'll riff off of
mm-hmm.
when I do it. And then I'll go into the family stuff because no matter where you go in the world, everybody has a mother.
Yeah.
Everybody has a father.
Yeah.
A brother, a sister.
And everybody enjoys hearing about your version of that.
Yes.
Like whatever.
Yeah.
And what's unique about my act is I have a fish out of water story because I'm Haitian and I grew up in the hood and I didn't grow up around any Haitian. So any immigrant around the world knows what it's like
yeah,
to
right.
be, you know.
And you have that extra layer to it too where people see you in the hood and they go, all right, black guy, hood, I know this guy.
Exactly.
And then you can go Haitian. You're like,
what?
What?
Yeah.
It's like a little.
And I don't look Haitian. Direction.
Right.
On top of that.
Well, not with that attitude.
Hey, here are my two reference points for Haitian is you and Wyclef, and yeah. that's it. So anything I know about Haiti, it's you and Wyclef.
Well, a Haitian comic, shout out Franz Cassius, because here's the thing. New York, Miami, there's tons of Haitian comics.
Yeah.
And there's only a few here in L.A. There's a guy by the name of Malik who works with Cedric the Entertainer a lot. And then there's Will Silvince,
yeah.
who's... you know, a popular
yep.
Haitian comic. And then there's this guy, Franz Cassius. And the thing that felt more gratifying is when you start doing something that, quote unquote, guys have been talking about for years, you're just like, fuck, I hope I'm not just regurgitating shit that they did
sure.
yeah.
before I had my epiphany.
Right.
Right.
And Franz saw me, he's like, dude, your shit is so different than ours. He goes, because you didn't grow up around us, so you don't have the same, you have a totally different
right.
observation.
Now we've talked about it a lot, but I would love to hear some actual examples growing up with Haitian parents. Like what's some of the stuff that you would, like in Shanghai, what would you tell them about your folks?
I would just tell them the stories, you know, about how, you know, how I got made fun of a lot. Like you got to understand, dude, in the 80s, a Haitian family in the hood and people didn't know what Haitian were, you'd have thought we were Martians. Like, everything was
wow.
questioned. Like, why does your father talk so funny? Like, if I'd have said I was African, they used to call me African Booty Scratcher, and I have no idea what that means.
That sounds like a Kama God. Sutra position.
Yeah. Oh, motherfucker, oh, African Booty Scratcher. Hey, nigga, this
man.
motherfucker, oh, African, like.
Quincelli, that cost $65 at the Wynn Casino in Vegas.
Oh,
after the massage.
Scratcher.
Yeah, yeah.
African Booty Scratcher yeah. massage. And I was like, I used to be like, I'm not African, I'm Haitian, so they didn't know what it was. So,
right.
so even you defending it just made it more confusing.
Yes.
So you
yeah,
weren't ever clarifying the, or wow, okay.
Yeah, so they're like, oh, you're Haitian, so what part of Africa?
Exactly. They had no idea what Haitians were. And then
yeah.
when I started letting people into my house, and then they would go, what the fuck is that? And
mm-hmm.
I'd be like, fried bananas? And they'd be like,
plantains.
Fried banana, like
Martian food.
Dude, my boy said this, and I say this on stage. He's like, your family fries fruit? And I go, yeah. And he's like, what else do you got? You guys be frying watermelon? Like, what do you guys, you know, like they just had no,
wow.
they had just no
Now, would you go out, would
reference.
You feel compelled to go out of your way to like educate people? Or were you just
not
like.
Not when I was a kid. I was embarrassed about it. Mm-hmm. Dude, when the phone rang, you'd have thought I was Carl Lewis, dude. Like, full Usain Bolt, dude. I did not want my parents to answer the phone.
Wow.
Because that's full on. Everybody would know that I'm different. And everybody would know I'd get made fun of. Like,
they had strong Haitian accents.
Oh, yeah.
And, what's the Haitian accent? Like I don't like know if you could do it, but...
Because I've got you go do podcast at Bud's. Oh, why you go? You know, is this a big heavy?
Yeah.
And my father's. Why you, Ben? You, I come here. You hear me call you? You crazy? Like, you know, is that this big hefty Creole? And then Haitians, what they do? I was just telling Franz this. I met one of my uncles for the first time ever in my life in Montreal.
Oh man. Holy shit!
And Haitians have this thing that they do, and I had Franz in tears, and I didn't understand. I was just telling them what they did. It's like, you know, being Jewish, the guilt trip.
Yeah, dude.
But see, Haitians, they're so theatrical. So I walked in there, oh, man. Ooh, and they start speaking Creole, but basically the English version, oh, you don't want to know your family. You ashamed. Oh, like it's just, but they're speaking the language. But I'll do it and like, oh, Upabez went corner for me. Ben. Upabez went corner for me. No. Bonjour. Des garçons, ça. Oh, you know, it's like.
I love that there's no R in your name all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. That's what I said. Yeah, my father called me Wooben, which is W-O-O-O-B-E-N. Like, it has nothing to do with Ruben. But, yeah, so talking about all those things, man, they just didn't understand the culture, so I used to hide from it. Mm-hmm. So take me being embarrassed most of my life, then starting doing stand-up comedy. Okay, I'm going to try it. Then it bombs like once. And like, okay, I'm done with that.
Yeah, need to understand too. When you're starting out, you don't have the confidence to try multiple. You're like, I'm getting up. Isn't that enough? I'm going to go up tomorrow and I'm up tonight. Like, don't expect me to try what I did tonight tomorrow. Like, exactly. If it didn't work.
I'm done with it.
Done.
It wasn't until like I'm a grown man and I kind of seen, you know, other examples of people being. Now, obviously, if they're. You know, if LA had, you know, a million Haitians, I'd be super famous right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's not a huge Haitian community. So.
Yeah, there's not a bunch of directors and producers going, where is our Haitian-based sitcom?
But
Haitians are so hot right now.
But, you know, the show that I'm developing right now, like when I was in Montreal, one thing that really took off was the stuff about my sister, because, you know, her going to prison and just her personality and her attitude. A few things, but she ended up, I think, getting locked up for selling drugs.
I was hoping you weren't going to say stealing Dr. Pepper from the grocery store they worked at, like I did in high school, because I was about to fucking like get up and run out of the fucking country.
Yeah. That whole
drugs,
thing.
Drugs, what kind of drugs?
Cocaine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and
locked
other
up for
things.
A while?
My sister did everything. Wow. Have you ever seen the show Empire?
Yeah.
My sister's Cookie.
Wow.
Like, literally, if you met my sister is, first time I did comedy, I was like, her name is Gladys, but now she's sophisticated, so she goes, my Renee now. And I go, Gladys, I'm thinking about doing comedy. She's like, really? And she was trying to turn over a new leaf, like, she had just gotten out, and she didn't want to hustle anymore.
Sure.
And then she goes, really? And I go, yeah. She goes, you think you could do it? I go, yeah. She's like, nigga, I'm funnier than you. My sister is the worst motivational speaker ever. She is, dude. She called me one time. You know what made me a hustler in this game? Why I hustle so hard? One time she called me, and I had, you know, we get late sets.
Yeah,
like, I didn't get home, and we hang out afterwards, go to Denny's or whatever.
1, 2 a.m.?
Later than that.
That,
you know, so we get home late. My sister calls me, and it was noon. And I go, hello? And I go, hey,
was that Kurt Russell answering the phone?
Yeah, no. I go, hello. That's Ruben Paul.
Yeah.
I go, hello. She's like, you sleep? And I go, yeah. And she goes, it's 12 noon. And I go, I know, I got home late. And she goes, nigga, you too broke to be sleep.
Well, you know what? She is funnier than you.
Changed my life.
Really?
That line. It, for some reason, it hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking about, you know what? I am too broke to be asleep right now. Wow. It's not like I got, you know, $100,000 in the bank just sitting there.
Yeah.
And I'm sleeping at noon. I need to get the fuck up. You know? So that's why I'm one of those comics that the latest I get up, the is probably 10 o'clock will be the latest. Yep. I'm usually up by like 8, 9.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, if you sleep till 1, now all the deals have been done.
Come on, dude.
Lunches have been had.
You're close with your sister.
Oh, yeah, very close.
Yeah. What was the first thing she did when she got out of prison? I met somebody recently who at a show who just got out of prison, and the guy goes, he was at Flappers in Burbank, and he goes, man, just thank you for doing this. I just got out. I was in for 8 years. I was locked up, and this is to see people in live comedy is amazing. I go, what was the first thing you did? He goes, go to Denny's, man, honestly. Go to Denny's and get a fucking Grand Slam.
I don't remember because I know, and she doesn't care. I've had this conversation with her. I put her business out there like that. But I know when she first got out, I was, I think, just going into high school.
Yeah.
So she still wasn't finished hustling. So she still was hustling for a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then when I went to college and she became a Christian, that's when she was like, you know what? I need to stop hustling. And I admire her so much because she used to make bank. And then I remember hearing...
That's why people do it, huh? The drug game is lucrative. Oh, my God.
Yeah. The whole thing. And she was doing more than just that. But I remember hearing her crying in her room one night. And the next morning I go, I said, I heard you last night. You okay? She's like, it's so hard. And I go, why? And she's like, I'm just trying to live right. And she goes, I'm struggling. She's like, I can go out and get $10,000 right now.
God.
You know, and she's like, just to,
how do you turn, like, you
know,
yeah,
what I mean? Just
you
to turn it off, you know, and I just, and that made me respect her even more because she made a choice. And then she, I'm sure having a kid that changed it all. So like, I can't be out in these streets doing this stuff, but it's crazy because I grew up and my sister used to gangbang. So like, add on top of everything that I told you, and then your sister being the toughest person in your family.
Yeah, holy shit.
On top of all that.
So like, were you the guy that when you got in trouble, you'd be like, hey, man, don't mess with me. I'm going to go get my sister.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to go get Gladys. I'm going to go get Crazy Gladys. They used to call her Crazy Gladys.
That's the name of your sitcom. Yeah. I'll go get Gladys.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's a prominent character on the show. And but again, until I started talking about all the things that I was embarrassed about, you know what I mean? I was just another funny guy, but I used to be embarrassed that my sister went to jail. I used to be embarrassed that my parents were from Haiti.
With good reason.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, it sounds crazy to be doing almost 20 years and have it take that long for you to feel comfortable talking about it. But it happens when it happens. Like you said, you tried. I mean, you probably could have... Also, I feel like we need to be compelled and have an emotional attachment when we're talking about anything on stage. Mm-hmm. So it just took this long for you to feel right. Now, I'm curious, too, when you said you wrote for other people.
Yeah.
Like, how long did you do that for?
I still do it.
Yeah. Do you think that stinted your
I don't think it stinted it. Development you got to like, understand, dude, once I started doing comedy and probably after that second set, that I did when I tried the Haitian stuff. I didn't try it on my first set. I kind of had what I was going to do. I just was like, I'm African American. Like that's my upbringing.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in the hood. Like those are all my friends. I didn't have any Haitian friends.
Yeah.
I didn't have any other friends who parents spoke any other language.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to be. I just wanted to be comfortable. I just wanted to fit in. I play ball. So I did quote unquote, you know, assimilated 100% fully. And I wasn't Haitian until I went home and closed. And even then, I was like, do you have to be speaking Creole at home? Like, can't you speak English? You know what I mean? I was totally embarrassed about it. And now it's been my biggest gift, you know, later on down the line. But it wasn't, I didn't start talking about my sister until later. But like you said, you have to feel comfortable talking about it.
Yeah,
and I think the first stuff was talking about just me and how I was embarrassed and all the humor that came from that. And then... All right, I'll start talking about my sister now. I'll start talking about I have pugs now. I'll start talking about all these things that I get made fun of, and it just connects you with the audience.
So now the writing for your show just must be so
it's awesome.
Not easy, but like you just must be so focused. Like you see everything so clearly now because you're like, oh, cool, now I know how to access all this stuff.
And it's easier to write because it's easy for me to write for other people because I can look at Brad and I know Brad's story.
Mm-hmm.
So if
you're writing stand-up for people?
Yeah.
Who?
So well,
are you allowed to say
a lot of them? But I've collaborated
with
a lot of people from Jamie Foxx to Cedric the Entertainer to George Lopez.
Holy shit!
You know, to Russell. You know what I mean?
It's amazing.
So, but to be honest with you, even to this day, I'm still always. And I was asking Marcus King, who used to manage Jamie for a while, and Mark Curry and Mike Epps, and he's one of the biggest. I go, I go, I never understood why people come to me for, you know, for jokes. Like, I never really, I always felt like I can write a joke, and, right? But he was just like, well, you have a good sensibility and you have great structure. And those are two things that are important in collaborating.
And like you said, like when you go to new cities, you absorb shit.
Pretty quickly.
So meeting people and getting to know them, you probably, like you said, you soak up their story and who they are pretty quick, yeah?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny, and I'm not just saying this, and I have to retrain my brain now because it's so difficult, especially when you're writing scripts and stuff, to write about yourself.
Yeah.
But comedically, of course, I can write for myself, but I can write an hour for Brad quicker than I can write an hour for myself.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
Just because, I don't know, I can watch him on stage. I can get his personality.
So
I can
see what I'm supposed to have a new special soon. How fast can you have that hour?
I don't know what it is.
I'll pay you an eggnog.
But it wouldn't be. But it wouldn't be like, hear Brad say this.
Right.
You know, it'd be like, hey Brad, what do you want to talk about?
You workshop and discuss.
You workshop, like people
get their perspective.
Give Kevin Hart a lot of shit,
and
they try to shit on him. But my whole thing is this, dude: if Richard Pryor can collaborate with people,
Paul Mooney,
anybody, and there's a lot of
Then who are you to have too much pride?
Because I don't think any great comic is just straight up taking something and going, "Cool, I'll say what you wrote."
Absolutely,
because they need to make it. Because if they've gotten that far. They've done it for a significant amount of time of doing it in their own voice, and they still need to have it be that way.
Absolutely.
And you need to kind of...
And here's the thing. Every great comic has a guy, whether the public knows about it or not. You have somebody you go, hey, man, what do you think of this? Or will you take a look at this?
Yeah.
Or what do you...
Sure.
You know what I mean?
And at every level.
Level.
It's that friend that you just bounce things off of, if it's something as lowly as that, or a guy who's actually... hired to work for you. And the thing is a lot of these guys, like Kevin Hart, and he's so busy with all the movies and everything else that he's doing, he doesn't have time to go up six times in a week and work the stuff out.
Exactly.
He does not have the time.
Because he's working 15-hour days and then has a call time 4 hours after that.
Yeah,
but you know what's great about him, though, man? And I'm friends with Kevin, and he's one of the only ones that I can think of that actually give the guys writing credit on his special.
Oh really?
And that's
incredible.
Unheard of.
Yeah.
It is, isn't it?
That's unheard of.
It's great.
And
he doesn't have that much pride. And he doesn't, because you never see that.
And mostly you never see such and such written by Paul Mooney and Richard Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not saying that you have to do that. Like, I'm not looking to get credit. I'm happy with what I get out of the deal.
Yeah. Sure.
You know what I mean? I get gratification of seeing a joke work.
Yeah.
You know, but but for people to try to attack Kevin and say, oh, he has ghostwriters and this, this, and that, they're not just going, hey, Kevin, say this. They actually work. They get together.
Sure.
And Kevin says, these are some of the things that are in my head that I want to talk about. And they all sit down and they...
Or they bring thoughts
to him
he hasn't been thinking about because he's when you're in so many different places.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, go great right here. If you talked about something like that, and then that's what they do.
Have you done that with them?
No, but one of my good friends is a part of his crew.
But that's what you have done with some of these guys.
Exactly.
That's what you do.
Yeah, you sit down. It's like, yo, man.
Is there somebody that's been more fun to jam with than other that really?
George Lopez is the best because he knows exactly what he wants to do. He's so specific. And if I can give any advice to any comics, is be as specific as you can about whatever you're doing.
Well,
and acting, comedy, just be specific.
That also relates to making it so much your own. No one else can do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it applies only to you, where you could see that joke and go, that's a George Lopez joke.
Exactly.
That's a Ruben Paul joke.
Exactly.
That's whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, wow, that's great. That's great that he has that work ethic.
It takes time
to
develop that specificity, though, right?
Yeah, it does. And you know, you guys know who Lance Crothers is, right? He collabs. He played Pootie Tang.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
But what people don't know about him, he's one of the biggest collaborators in town. Like, I won't tell you on air, but I told you some of the guys that call him and that he writes with, you'd be like, holy shit, you know.
Maybe Alan Thicke?
But in having I had a conversation with him one time about it, just randomly. And it's the same thing, because I thought maybe his process is different. You know, he's with Chris Rock, Wanda Sykes.
Fuck.
You know, the, like, that's, you know, and those are, I mean, those, that's public knowledge. People know about them.
Sure.
But there's other people that don't know he collaborated with them.
Right.
And is this cool to hear? It's like, yo, man, we just get together. And that's all you do is vibe. And, you know, hey, man, I'm thinking about this. Yeah. Or I'm thinking about doing that.
Shit, Brad and I will do that here and there. But I feel like to have that, like, I mean, I, without a doubt, if I got to that point where I had to start churning stuff out, like, why wouldn't you have?
I'll tell you another guy who used to do it for a lot of people, and I don't think he'll mind me saying this, is Neil Brennan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before Neil started doing stand-up.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Neil, I've known Neil for almost 20 years.
That's
and
awesome.
More than half of that, he wasn't a stand-up, but he was always around stand-ups. He was always
writing for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know,
that's why he's got such great structure for it now. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just love and just how, like, how Neil looks. I just love, like, the most, like, black comics just going like, hey, Neil, I really need the black perspective. Come over here and write this,
you know,
joke for me.
And it's one of those, it's, I don't know, like, I feel blessed that people respect me enough to even want my opinion on anything.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's incredible.
You know, that's not something I set out to do. And it's, to be honest, it's something that I don't enjoy. I don't want to say I don't enjoy doing. Is this something I can do?
So Russell asked you, and then that kind of word spread after you guys started doing stuff.
Well, when I started working with George, like, people knew I worked with George, and people knew I worked with Jamie. And then the order kind of went like Jamie, George, Cedric.
Yeah.
And then from, obviously, that's all you need is those guys for credibility.
Sure.
Were you with Jamie during his In Living Color days?
Right. Towards the end of that, yeah,
wow.
That's when I met him, and then I used to tour with Jamie when I first started.
No shit.
I toured with him before I should have been touring.
What the fuck was that like?
Yeah.
I learned how to perform, and you're talking about tough love and learning. It's just from the, not saying he's a great guy, not saying he's a bad guy, but nothing was, the opportunity was handed to me, but everything else was earned, because when you're the guy who doesn't necessarily earn that spot, you know, there's initiation that you're going to go through.
That, and yeah, it sounds, as you're going through it, it's a lot of like, what the fuck, why is this happening to me? But now that you look back, you're like, oh, thank God that happened.
Yeah, but because, just to have to get a plane ticket, pay for your hotel, and the money you have left is what you made on the gig.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's when you're like, you know, when you move on and then people start paying for your stuff, you're like, oh, major stars pay for
They do that?
They do that? Wait a minute. I don't have to pay for my own hotel? You know?
Did you ever go to an In Living Color taping?
Yeah. And then this is what sucks. When you're, you know, we check into the Ritz-Carlton, and I had to stay at the Ritz with everybody else, so that would be half of what I...
Oh, fuck.
Oh, but they would make you pay for a Ritz room? And not...
Come on, dude.
Wow.
Well, that's, come on, dude.
We'll
talk about this off the air. It was real fucking life. People don't know. But when you come back to the clubs, all anybody knows is like, yo, you two.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or whoever it was.
But you had to keep your mouth shut. You can't start...
Nah, man. Yeah. But back then, I didn't know any better.
Sure.
You know, you think just a gig is a...
but then
you're just blessed to be...
Yeah.
And
I think
let me
that's
just say
good
this.
You were blissfully unaware, you know?
And I'm so grateful, even to this day, for those experiences.
Yep.
You know, because me, I shouldn't have been performing in front of 2,000 people every night. And it taught me how to perform, and it made me a better comic, because there's nothing worse than opening, and you've opened for big names.
Mm-hmm.
And then imagine an all-black theater, and they're not there to see you. Like, you know, the old hack thing, but used to happen is, are you guys ready for Jamie Foxx? But first, you know.
Oh, God.
You know,
like a terrible NyQuil dream.
Come on, dude. So just...
But
you know,
that makes you a beast, and now there's not an audience out there that you'll walk in.
That,
no one's going to
tame that beast,
dude. Let me tell you something.
But in the moment, that's fucking terrifying.
I was in South Africa, and I did this the second time I went to South Africa. I did this show called Blacks Only, which is a spin on apartheid, but it's pretty much all black. But they'll throw a token white comic on there, or whatever. And Dwayne Perkins was like, "Yo, you're going to go do shout out Dwayne Perkins.
Yeah,
you're
going
to go do this. You're going to go do Blacks Only, right?" I go, "Yeah." I go, "How is it?" He goes, "Dude, you're going to kill." I said, "Really?" He goes, "But those comics, those South African comics are going to destroy." And in my mind, I'm going, yeah, And he goes, dude, they're going to make you work. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm sure they are. And in my mind, yeah, they made you work, Dwayne.
Right. Not me. I'm
not
Paul.
Me. Exactly. Dude, there was this comic
named
Skoomba.
Shout out to Skoomba.
That sounds like my robot vacuum.
Brad. Brad and Adam, let me tell you, and he wasn't the only one.
Yeah.
These South African comedians would come out, and it was like Def Comedy Jam 19 when Martin Lawrence did it.
Right, right, right.
They would be getting standing ovations like they were destroying so hard. And you and then as a comic, you don't mind if somebody's destroying, you're like, oh, what are they doing? Or what are, you know, I can't understand a word they're saying because it's not in English.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
So they're massacring the room.
Yeah. And you don't even know what they're talking about.
I have no idea. No reference. I can't piggyback. I can't rip off of anything. So, dude, I'm sweating. And I wanted to text Dwayne while this was going on.
Like, you motherfucker.
So these guys are killing. And I'm thinking, I can still follow that. Yeah, follow that. Then Skoomba goes on. Skoomba, shout out to Skoomba.
Shout out to Skoomba.
He comes out to a song.
Yeah.
Never heard the song. But as soon as he come out to the song, hey, everybody stands up and they're dancing. Oh, did I mention that these are 5,000 seat venues?
Oh, my God.
So I'm headlining this.
5,000 people doing the Macarena.
Dude, dancing. And then he came out and he started doing this little dance. Place erupts while he's doing this dance.
God, geez.
And then he said like a phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, blah, 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 and the fucking place exploded.
It was like the South African get her done.
Yeah. Dude, it was, dude.
Unreal. So you're standing there off stage.
And I got to follow this.
What are you thinking?
Oh, and the show has already been on for 2 hours.
Oh my God. How long are you doing?
I got to do 30.
Oh, God.
And I'm talking about when I tell you, Brad and Adam, they are destroying.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it.
Like, it's another level, like crazy. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, damn, I got to go on after this.
I got no catchphrase.
I have no catchphrase. I have nothing to rip out. So I just had to do me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to lie. I didn't do as well as him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go up to the promoter. I go, look, I could follow him, obviously, but this guy needs to close.
Yeah.
He needs to close.
Right.
Like, I don't need, put it this way, everyone will have a better.
Big.
Yeah, my ego's not that big.
Yeah.
You know? If it's not a level playing field, like, I have no, like, he speaks their language. And he was killing so hard. Yeah. I kept going, like, what is he saying? What is he saying? And he was so rapid fire that they didn't have time to tell me what he was saying because it was one joke after another joke another joke.
People backstage are probably laughing, too.
They were laughing, too.
Oh, my God.
And I'm trying to
so
tell them, they'd be like, blah, blah, blah. And then they would be laughing. I go, what did he say? And then he's on to the next. They go,
God.
Yeah, dude.
I think the stagehand just looks at you and goes, you are never following this. You're like, ah, shit.
It was crazy, man.
I think there is value to show order. Like, you're still put the way things flow, the flow of the show.
Absolutely.
It's not when you hear. Like, no part of me heard you say that being like, oh, you can't fucking fall. It's like, no, if that guy's doing that and it's going to crush so hard, that should be how the show ends.
That should be how the show ends,
with the dance and the whatever, and because also people get so spent after certain things.
You want to hear a great story?
Yeah.
Fire away.
I used to do a work for the people who put on the tour when I was out with Jamie. Those promoters used to book me on a lot of different shows. Mm-hmm. So they booked me on a show with Mark Curry, Cedric the Entertainer, and Chris Rock.
Wow.
Jeez.
Chris Rock had closing.
Yeah.
Cedric went on and massacred that room. Chris Rock went on after him and did okay. And this was funny. This is what's cool about being the fly on the wall of being insignificant. And I heard Mario Joyner talk about this on some documentary or whatever. I was on that show when Chris Rock did the Bring the Pain material.
Oh, shit. Oh, that's the black people and there's...
Yes.
Yeah.
In which
the word I can't say.
That special took Chris Rock's career to a whole nother level.
Yeah.
We can all be in agreement on that.
Oh, yeah.
One of the greatest specials of all time.
One of the greatest specials of all time.
Bring the Pain.
Behind Cedric couldn't follow it.
Wow.
So that just lets you know that.
Yeah.
just because the guy closes doesn't mean that's why my ego doesn't evolve, doesn't mean you're a better comic.
Yeah.
There's styles and energies, sure, and low energy and high energy. My thing is, what's good for the show?
Yes.
It doesn't mean that just because I don't put you last doesn't mean I don't think you're great.
Yeah. Like,
but this dude is going to sing at the end. He's going to do impressions. Yeah. He's more of a crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Pleaser,
sure.
So let him close.
You're not going to put Stephen Wright, who is a brilliant comedian.
Come on, preach, brother.
On first.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he...
He
like,
said on first.
Hey, well, yeah.
But Steven's very low energy, and so you're not going to put a guy like a Cedric, or this is going to be some deep comedy knowledge, like an Angel Salazar,
yeah,
who does dances, and there's changes, and there's music, and there's all these different things. And then, like, and now Stephen Wright... I once spilled spot remover on my dog. I haven't seen him in weeks. You're just not going to do that.
Yeah, but the average layman is going to go, oh, man, that Angel Salazar is way better than Stephen Wright.
Of course.
I think it's a
competition.
Yeah, it's just not a different style.
It's just a different style.
And Adam, like you said, there's something about show flow, and that's why I always – love watching you, Ruben, because you could host.
Yeah, man.
You could close.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, dude.
You can go in the middle. Doesn't matter.
You're
where
in a
you
small
go.
Small group of people that can do that. It's pretty incredible.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah. I appreciate that. But yeah, it just shows you. So, and that was, I mean, that people always ask me if I'm ever scared.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably back when I first started. But as a seasoned comic, that's the first time I've ever been like, holy shit. What the fuck am I going to do? Like, literally.
It's incredible, right?
Yeah, what am I going to do? Like, I can't even give you... Do you remember Bernie Mac when he did I Ain't Scared of You Motherfuckers on Def Jam?
Yeah.
You remember
Def
how
Jam.
He did it?
Yeah.
I ain't scared of you motherfuckers. Yeah.
You know how hard that destroyed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Multiply that times three.
No way.
I'm not bullshitting you, dude.
Was leaving ever an option in your head? Just walking
like,
out?
Fuck it. I'm
be
out.
Honest.
It crossed my mind.
Yeah, for a second.
But I'm in South Africa and they're paying me a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So
I'm
like, that's... You can't just go down the street to your house.
Yeah. You start digging, like, are you still going back in your head like really deep bits, or are you like quickly calling somebody like quick?
Well,
like,
well, I knew
me
this.
Internet-based South African jokes. Like.
I just went up there, and all I could say to myself, and one thing that it's, you know, taking this conversation full circle, I was like, all I could do is the jokes that I have.
Yeah.
That's all I can do is tell my story. So get ready for this Haitian shit. Get ready for my, you know, whatever I'm going to talk about.
Did you close your set with his dance? That's what I would have done.
I should have, man.
And don't
get me wrong. I don't want any I did great.
Yeah,
of course.
But on a scale from 1 to 10... He was an 11 and I was a 9.
Yeah.
You know, or 8.5. Like, he massacred the room. Yeah. And sometimes it's like that in comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all been on shows where, man, that was a great set, but tonight was Brad's night, man.
Yeah,
I fucking killed. But, tonight was Johnny Sanchez's night. Tonight was Adam's night, dude.
Yeah,
no one could. And that's what's awesome about comedy. It's like, next time, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
like, next time's going to be my night.
Next time's going to be my night. And that's what I love. I love seeing people kill.
Yeah.
There's so many haters in comedy, but I love fucking seeing.
Well, Ruben, now, Paul, I think whenever you're on stage, it is always your night.
Wow.
Well, thank you.
Another Kurt Russell impression.
Thank you, bro. We're all doing Kurt Russell.
Right. I got to ask real quick before we wrap this up. Seeing people kill and you're saying, oh, it was his night. You're a big boxing fan. That Pacquiao Mayweather fight, whose night was it that night? Because I don't feel like anybody who watched it.
Here's the thing.
Because you were there.
I was there.
Yeah.
And I'm a boxing purist.
You had a ticket to that.
There was so much hype. And I'm not even a huge boxing enthusiast, but I watched and was just like, oh, so is this like the warm-up? And then they fight after this? Or is this...
Adam, can I be 100% honest with you?
Yeah, fire away.
I knew it was going to be a boring fight before I even went.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people who really are into boxing, you hope that Pacquiao was able to change. But in your mind, like anybody who knows, if Mayweather does what Mayweather does, this is what the fight is going to look
defensive
like.
Defensive boxing.
This is what the fight is going to look like. You kind of knew. Now, some people thought, well, maybe Mayweather might take some chances and be a little bit more aggressive. That would have made the fight. But if he fights the way he normally fights, that's what you're going to get. He's just the best at what he does. Now, he's not exciting.
Right.
He doesn't. And to be exciting, you have to take...
A lot of risks. Yeah,
and he's not the type that's going to do that. That's just not his. That's not what he
does. So it'd be like watching Dennis Rodman and Dikembe Mutombo just go one on one. You're like, oh, it's a defensive battle. Not a lot of scoring.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just a lot of blocks.
Well, but in boxing, it's only one guy doing the defense and the other guy trying to catch the guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it a little bit like, oh, man, why don't you stand up and fight? Well, if you've watched his whole career, he never. That's what he's been doing.
I guess my problem, too, is that the first fight I legitimately like sat down and watched with a bunch of people was Tyson Holyfield. So I've been conditioned to expect flesh to be chewed and eaten every time I see a fight. And action, exactly.
Yeah.
So when there's not... And I mean, I don't need an ear to get bit every time. But guess what?
Hey, maybe a calf every now and then. Switch it up.
Hey, there's a lot of meaty parts of the body.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
you know what other fight
I
went to?
Bite a tit.
Yeah.
You remember the when Riddick Bowe fought Evander Holyfield and a guy parachuted?
Fan man.
I was at that fight.
Ah, wow. You were at that fight?
I was at that fight.
There was a riot that broke out.
Crazy. Yeah. My sister at the time used to work at HBO. And
holy
she
shit.
Got us tickets for that fight.
And just to set the stage, there's a heavyweight title fight. It's in Vegas, the atmosphere.
Caesar's Palace,
holy shit. In the middle of a fight, this dude with a parachute and a giant fan strapped to his back lands and gets tangled in the ropes. And everyone's just like freaking out because they don't know if like is
what
the army
hell?
Parachuting
exactly,
in
dude.
What's that like what were you guys thinking when you see a fan man just dive into the ring?
I just remember being in shock and not really knowing what happened and not really understanding it until I saw it on the news later. Like,
right,
kind of just like
my
that was
my favorite part was people dragged him then into the audience and started
beating
him.
Yeah,
they started like fuck you, this is a fight.
Yeah, I was at that fight. That was I think that was one of the first fights I'd ever gone to.
What is the energy in it? Like the energy for the Pacquiao Mayweather fight? Is it comparable to like an Oprah taping or a Price is Right taping?
Dude, it's complete pandemonium.
Yeah.
Like you thought that these guys were just that's what made the fight so shitty cuz you went the energy in the room was like, "Oh, these guys are going to brawl."
Well, the hype, dude,
it's going to be blood everywhere.
Right.
And then
right.
Mayweather comes out and he does his masterful performance and mm-hmm. you're not going to hit me and I'm going to hit you and whenever you try to hit like he did what he does, you know?
Yeah, that's what he does in his fights.
Yeah, even when he fought Canelo Alvarez, I went to the Canelo fight when he fought Canelo Alvarez. And that's when, like, all the Mexicans, it was, like, 99% Mexican MGM.
Yeah, that's when he came out in the sombrero, right?
Yeah, man. And the place was going nuts. And, again.
So many celebs at that fight, huh?
Oh,
Pacquiao, but, like, anybody you see or met that was just like, holy shit, that guy's a fan of boxing? Or
oh, dude. I mean, you just ran into everybody.
Yeah.
You ran the cast, from Ray Donovan, like
what if you said the cast of Designing Women? How great would that have been? Delta Burke was there.
Oh my god, Delta Burke, huge fight fan.
You know who walked by me that kind of tripped me out was Robert Kraft, the owner of the
Patriots.
The Patriots. He just walked by like all normal because we're all in this before the fight. We're all in this pre-HBO party. I think it was either HBO or Showtime party, but everybody was there.
Yeah,
like
Star power. That
I mean, it was like being at the Oscars before.
Probably more so.
Yeah, it's just you just saw nothing but
athletes, and you're getting every spectrum.
Everybody, man. And you just
walk by,
like,
you see Elton John, Serena Williams, and Tony Danza in one line of people.
Exactly.
You're like, marry, fuck, kill. Obviously, is what you first think of. Yeah.
And then when you literally, you'll see like we took a picture. It was like Louis C.K., mm-hmm. Chappelle. And you're just like, oh, whatever, guys. Like, you know, just,
wow,
hey, you know
man.
What I mean? That's
wow.
how, I mean, you're seeing,
that's incredible.
You know, Michael Douglas and
Frank
Magic
Thomas.
Johnson and Frank Thomas.
Wait, the big Hertz here?
You see
Mark Wahlberg, you sit down. Frank Thomas
is
here.
You see Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Cecil Fielder, and Rita Rudner in one row.
And now we know what Adam Ray masturbates to at night.
You're welcome.
Wait a minute, is that Ryan Hamilton?
Ruben, man, I can't thank you enough for coming out.
Yeah,
plug your stuff. What do you got to plug?
What do I have a few things going on?
Yeah, okay.
Well, can you plug? And then next week, Monday.
Next week. Also, next Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be up north with George Lopez, mm-hmm. and then
so tomorrow and Wednesday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Tomorrow, Wednesday, I'll be at Tommy T's with George Lopez.
Oh, awesome.
And Pleasanton.
But, yeah.
We're doing the Pleasanton room.
Nice.
And then doing a couple dates with Russell. And then I go to South Africa, which is one of my proudest moments, is I got invited to do a Mandela tribute.
Holy
from the family.
And
it's going to be televised in South Africa. Probably one of the biggest honors in my career.
Do not let Scuba open up for you at that
thing. Hell no, dude.
Keep Scuba away.
Hashtag keep Scuba away.
Scoomba.
Sorry, I knew it was Scuba.
Holy shit, you don't know how funny that is, because I initially had that thought. I was like, hope I don't have to follow Scuba this time. You know, but Alicia Keys, I think, is doing it. Like, is this big?
Unreal.
Yeah, and to show you how fucked up we can be as comics sometimes, when my manager called me, he's like, yo, we got this thing. They want you to do this
family
tribute concert for the Mandela Foundation. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Why do they want me? And she was like, because you're fucking great. That's why they want you.
Like,
I just think it's an honor, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's fantastic.
That's going to be in November, November 15th.
Will they televise that on the, will there be a way people can see it in the States afterwards?
I hope so, because I know it's going to be televised live in South Africa, so. That's hopefully
fantastic.
It gets out. But then I got other dates around. You can go to my website, RubenPaul.com.
And I am
Facebook.
Ruben Paul
I am
on
Ruben
Twitter,
Paul
and
Twitter.
I am Ruben Paul on Instagram.
Yes.
You a big Instagram guy?
I'm going to start being a big Instagram guy.
Yeah, I saw you tweet your tickets out to the Mayweather Pacquiao fight. Like, hey, everyone else who's not.
I got to follow both
large.
Of you guys on there. I'm trying to get better at it, and I'm going to start posting a lot more.
I hear you too. Like, there's
stuff.
I have to. It's a part of the game, and I have to force myself.
Do you guys shoot a lot
too.
Of stuff? At all and put it on social media?
Yeah.
See?
I used to be all about videos. That's all I did, like, you know, doing videos from, you know, YouTube, Funny or Die.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that did used to be your thing.
That was, all the time. And that's how I, you know,
got popular.
Helped get my name out there a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, and it's dropped off since, but I mean, he's all about the Twitter, like, Facebook. He fucking practices jokes through Twitter and Facebook and stuff.
At least one joke a day.
And
stuff out there.
And just so you know, that's why I have my pug with me today, because I was shooting a sketch. But that's what I'm doing. I hired someone that's going to help me shoot a lot of stuff and
it's
going to move my social media. So I'm going to start shooting. I want you to be in some shit with me.
Thank you. And I'm going to say a very awesome sentence right now. I can't wait for the pug sketch.
You know I have two pugs too, right?
Oh, God.
That's
going to be good.
That's drink five at home if you're playing the how many times will Brad say, I want to hear the pug sketch. See the pug sketch.
Ruben, thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, that's the show. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, Slicinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.